ExxonMobil ran its own war game scenarios about oil supply disruptions. The company's political risk analysts asked themselves, what would happen in the most extreme case imaginable? For example, if Iran's 2.3 million barrels per day of oil exports were removed from world markets because of a war, while turmoil in Venezuela simultaneously removed another million barrels per day. The shock of losing 3.5 million barrels a day of exports would certainly create price spikes, and soaring oil prices could produce economic shocks in the United States and Europe. Physical delivery of oil, however, did not look like a catastrophic problem in either place, the planners concluded, at least not in a crisis that lasted less than 6 months. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve would help cushion any disruptions. After a certain number of months, if the reserve ran low, the governments would be forced to ration. But the extremity and unlikelihood of the imagined events needed to produce such a physical supply problem suggested to ExxonMobil's risk analysts that there was an element of surge capacity in the global system, as the corporation's Rex Tillerson put it. The company's wargaming implied that the global oil markets had become more resilient and flexible than some analysts assumed. At the same time, the threat of disruption to physical supply from rogue states is not very well understood in terms of what would really happen, Tillerson believed. The central reality is this. The global free market for energy provides the most effective means of achieving U.S. energy security, as Rex Tillerson, one of the competitors to lead ExxonMobil in the future, once put it. In the global market, the nationality of the resource is of little relevance. Energy made in America is not as important as energy simply made wherever it is most economic. Punishing sanctions and uneconomic supply lockups, such as those sometimes pursued by China, undermined American security. The United States should be enlarging this global energy pool, not dividing it. The economic interests of ExxonMobil and other international oil companies lay squarely in the realm of Douglas Feith's idealized vision of oil globalization, not in the realization of Mearsheimer's pessimism. ExxonMobil's oil and gas holdings were so widely scattered around the world that the corporation and its shareholders were at least as vulnerable to transport and production disruptions as China's government. This understanding of risk shaped some of ExxonMobil's lobbying on foreign policy issues in Washington. The corporation promoted free trade philosophies at every turn and opposed economic sanctions against oil producers, except in the most egregious cases. Until September 11, ExxonMobil had opposed oil sanctions imposed on Libya, Iran, and Syria. The corporation's economic self-interest on the sanctions issue was obvious. But the policy arguments, mounted on PowerPoint slides by its in-house lobbyists, were broad. The creation of a free-flowing global oil pool, one shaped to the greatest possible degree by market incentives, would promote American national security, ExxonMobil's representatives insisted. Are people in your industry salivating over the possibility of gaining access to Iraqi oil? An interviewer asked Lee Raymond as the war deteriorated.
Oh, I don't think salivating, no.
How would you describe it?
Well, I think there's a lot of caution in our industry about it. I think everybody is interested, but you need to have security. You need to have a tax structure. You need to have a legal structure. And there's no confidence that that's going to be there for some time. So I would describe it that we're all interested because we know the resources are there. Whether or not there's the framework to develop those resources in an economic fashion, the jury is out on that one.
There was more concern within ExxonMobil about the corporation's ability to keep replacing its reserves than Raymond let on. The numbers the corporation was reporting to Wall Street at this time were not impressive. At best, ExxonMobil seemed to be churning in place, finding only enough new oil each year to replace that which it had pumped and sold. A former manager recalled a 2004 meeting at which the message was, "We can't get enough new assets to replace our reserves." As a result, geologists and scientists throughout the upstream division took a fresh 360-degree review of reserve prospects worldwide. They revisited old assumptions. They looked everywhere, the manager recalled.
Iraq offered a potential breakthrough in ExxonMobil's access to equity reserves, but Raymond counseled patience. ExxonMobil had owned oil in Iran and Iraq for decades during the 20th century. It did not own oil in those countries in 2003, but 20 years into the future, as Tillerson said, we'll have another set of circumstances in some of those countries. One attribute of a nation-state ExxonMobil lacked was an army or a navy of its own. China could free ride on the United States Navy's control of the open seas. Lee Raymond had no choice but to free ride on the Bush administration's efforts to subdue Iraq. Raymond had been a friend of Vice President Cheney's for more than a decade. He was not immune, however, to the disillusionment that set in among many conservative Republicans as the Iraq War deteriorated and the Bush administration's overreach and incompetence in the conflict became increasingly exposed. As a global business leader whose corporate profits depended on international stability, Raymond identified more with Republican realists such as George H.W. Bush or his former National Security Advisor Brent Scowcroft than with the more idealistic activists and democracy promoters around Bush's son. ExxonMobil and its generations of homebred executives felt they had learned long ago to deal with the world as it was, to bargain as needed with dictators and authoritarian emirs and revolutionary leaders. The transformational Wilsonian streak in Bush's democracy promotion and pressure diplomacy in the Middle East after September 11 increasingly discomfited Raymond. The ExxonMobil chairman still trusted Cheney and saw him frequently, and he admired greatly Bush's second energy secretary, Samuel Bodman, a former oil industry executive. Throughout his cultivation of the Bush administration, however, Raymond purposefully and self-consciously kept ExxonMobil at arm's length from the administration's attempts to remake post-Saddam Hussein Iraq. It was not in ExxonMobil's interests to become tainted by failed nation-building projects in a country that held one of the world's largest unproduced oil and gas resource bases. American neo-imperial ambition in Iraq might fail, but ExxonMobil's private empire had its own enduring interests and would not be rushed. Mid-level State Department officials continually summoned ExxonMobil executives to meetings about the planned revitalization of Iraq's oil sector after mid-2003 and urged the corporation to open a Baghdad office. The Bush administration officials who ran these meetings seemed to believe that only security concerns stood in the way of ExxonMobil's making an immediate big push for Iraq oil contracts. The state officials tried to assure the corporation that security would improve, even when the daily newspaper headlines suggested otherwise. "Nobody at ExxonMobil wants to get killed for an oil well," Raymond's representatives explained at these meetings. "But our greater concern is political risk." Would there be an agreement guaranteeing the long-term presence of American troops in Iraq? What oil laws would a legitimate Iraqi government approve? Any investment ExxonMobil made in Iraqi fields that would be worth the inevitable risks would require multi-decade commitments. Was Lee Raymond interested in Iraqi oil? Of course. Every corporation in the global oil industry was interested. But it was obvious that the Bush administration lacked the capacity to create conditions for ExxonMobil or any other serious international player to make a politically secure, economically rewarding deal in Iraq anytime soon. Raymond had, in the meantime, joined the Bush administration as a partner in an oil play that might, in a single stroke, resolve ExxonMobil's reserve replacement conundrum for years to come. Of the four nation-states with oil reserves sizable enough to transform ExxonMobil's position, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran, and Russia, one looked more plausible than the others. Quietly, without anything like the fanfare that surrounded Iraq, Raymond and his allies in Bush's first-term cabinet had developed an opportunity on a grand scale, in hopeful partnership with Vladimir Putin.